Chris, you want to repeat the news that you just told us? Because I think it's important, and I think it's going to inform a lot of the content of the Besties moving forward.
So I am just going off of some reporting I saw on TheVerge.com. But the headline...
Can't trust it. Can't trust that rag.
You can't trust that rag. The headline is, Spotify will let its original podcast host include full songs in their show. And we are an original podcast of Spotify.
Right. So I guess we could just break them off a little piece of, and I don't want the world to see me, because I don't. So I could sing the whole thing and no one could, the Goo Goo Boys can't get you.
Can't do anything.
That's strong. I like that. This show's about to get fucking good. Everybody who's been listening to this show since the beginning, it's about to get good.
Yeah, get ready, because it's about to get fucking good. Finally.
Are we going to be singing karaoke style, or do you think it will become more of a musical parody act?
Okay.
Oh, that's fun. Uh-huh. So we can do it, like we can mix in, like we'll be singing Superman by Third Eye Blind, but we might mix in some stuff about Blinks the Time Sweeper in there.
What yeah. I think we should do, what let's do the original tracks, but do like, you know how celebrities are always having fun lip-syncing?
Yeah, sure.
We'll do that on our podcast.
Right.
So we'll play the original track, but we'll lip-sync it.
And you're thinking, but that how's that work? We can't see you. We're going to make very exaggerated lip, tongue, and mouth sounds.
Yeah.
So that you know. So it'll be
that ASMR is going to get you. We're going straight to the wild, wild west.
This is a punchy episode.
Come for me, Cisco. Come for me. Maybe make my booty go. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best, like, 15% of a game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best video game console of the week.
My name is Russ Farshik, and I know the best D of the week, and it's D&D.
Huh.
Okay. Well, welcome to the Besties, where we're going to be talking about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It's a game of the year podcast that goes all year long. It is a book club, but games. It is about Baldur's Gate. This week we're locking the gates, and then we're unlocking the gates, and we're opening mm-hmm. them up. And it's Baldur's Gate 3, the triple. Finally. The wait is Ogre. Ogre's in it. Boy. Chris, what's Baldur's Gate? I've already forgotten.
Chris, how much did you prepare for this? Because you didn't really play Baldur's Gate. We all three of us played, but you didn't really play. So I can give the description if it's easier for you.
I mean, there's like elves and monsters, okay. And then you like collect swords and shields.
I'll take it away. Look, Baldur's Gate 3 is a game made by Larian Studios. It is based on the original Baldur's Gate series.
Both Larry and his studios pitched in on this one.
Made by that studio. And so that studio did not work on the original Baldur's Gate games, but they did work on the Divinity Original Sin series of RPGs, which are very popular and everyone loves them, including your very own Besties. Baldur's Gate 3 takes a lot of the ideas that were introduced in Divinity Original Sin and integrates them into the actual legit rules of Dungeons and Dragons 5e, is that correct?
Yeah, fifth edition.
Yes. It's just like kind of a very open-ended, you decide how your character builds out and adventures and who you meet and who you romance, you know, you name it. It's just one of those giant classic RPGs made by a studio that is right now maybe the best studio for making RPGs.
It's also in early access, and we'll talk about that too.
We're going to talk about that and so much more right after this quick break.
Yo, I have a question, because I didn't play the game, so I have a lot of questions. I'm going to play the game. Don't get me wrong. I've just been a little busy, but something else we'll talk about later. But my question is this even a video game? Because I've been on Twitter.com, and some people have been mad that this is not a full video game.
Yeah, so...
I th- Yeah, it's not. I mean,
well, we should.
It's a video.
It is a video game.
Let's talk about what it is first. Okay. Right. It's a Dungeons and Dragons game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. You're a isometric role playing game, CRPG, with dice rolls. Literally. I mean, you much like Dungeons and Dragons. When you come up against a challenge, usually initiated by conversation, you will roll on that and you to see whether or not you succeed in a challenge. Some of those also happen automatically. For example, Dungeons and Dragons has this idea of a perception stat. And when you walk by something hidden in the environment, the game automatically rolls in the background and tells you not whether or not your perception roll succeeded mm-hmm. or failed. And then if it succeeds, you'll see something in the environment that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. If not, no dice. The combat is also on dice rolls in just using Dungeons and Dragons rules. I mean, and you see a lot of small thing. What's cool about that is Dungeons and Dragons has a lot of nuance in terms of the way you interact with the world that you maybe wouldn't see in a traditional CRPG that was built specifically with the game's own mechanics in mind. For example, you see things like a shove. Mm-hmm. In there, which is just like, I'm going to shove that guy and maybe he'll fall off a cliff. That kind of interactive stuff that can happen in the moment that maybe you wouldn't see because it wouldn't be designed from the ground up with those systems.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed, so I've played a lot of CRPGs, but not a lot of D&D CRPGs, not to bludgeon us with acronyms. And something that I've always been very familiar with because I've played the classic Fallout games and stuff like that is the idea of action points, right? So like, I'm going to take this special attack and it's going to use 3 of my 10 action points this turn, and then maybe the remaining 7 points I'm going to use to run away from this guy. Because this game uses D&D rules, that is completely different, to the point where you've got, Griffin, can you explain the like how like a turn plays out and what you can do in a given turn?
Yeah, I mean, this is a turn-based take on D&D, which is different from... I'm not the most experienced with the old Baldur's Gate games, but I'm pretty sure they operated in that sort of pseudo-real-time combat thing. The best example of this, that I think is probably a more familiar touch point for everybody, is KOTOR. Knights of the Old Republic used, I think, advanced D&D, or maybe 3.5 or some D&D rule set, but it was in real time, right? Like the fight was happening and it was not turn-based. There was just like a period of time that passed before you would execute your next action, so you would queue them out. This works in Baldur's Gate 3 as it did in Divinity, which is just straight up turn-based combat. There is initiative rolls, which is very D&D, and you on your turn, you have a set amount of movement. So a more sort of live character can move across the battlefield a bit more easily. You have a standard action and a bonus action. And a standard action is something like attacking or using a big spell. Or a bonus action is something like trying to hide or jumping. Or there are some spells and abilities that don't take, you know, your full action, like some buffs and some heals are just bonus actions. And then you also have one reaction, which can be something like an opportunity attack if somebody moves away from you. That's how it works in 5e. Juice and I have been playing 5e for 6 years now, and that is very, very, very familiar. And I mean, it's why I replayed, or rather, I played through all the way for the first time Divinity Original Sin 2 this year on Switch, and really got into it because it was very, very similar in that you had like action points and you could only move a certain amount and you could do a certain amount. But what Divinity did that no other D&D game had ever done was that sort of lateral thinking, experimentation, improvisation, physical based stuff. You could combine surfaces or knock people around the battlefield into traps that you had set. And Baldur's Gate 3 is super, super good about that stuff.
Or stuff like, I'll give you one. There's a spell that you can get early on if you poke around where you can talk to the dead.
Yeah.
Any dead. Like if you see a dead, because that's a D&D thing, right? Like you can cast a spell and talk to a corpse to see if it's got anything for you. And the stuff you're doing feels like really meaningful every time. I was dying constantly. I mean, like,
yeah,
you get wiped a lot. Like, it is savage.
I started the game with 10 hit points. Like, you start at level 1, and a level 1 D&D character is a fucking toddler. Like, they are, they can't do a whole lot, and if you just run into the middle of a battlefield, even if you're playing like a fighter, you're going to get shadracked.
It feels less like a game design and more like, well, why'd you attack that thing? You know that you're a child. Why did you attack? You should have stayed away from it. It seems dangerous. You shouldn't have done that. That was a really bad idea. There was a look at that thing. It's called a mind flayer. It's got 70 hit points. Just because it's there doesn't mean you should attack it. You should run away. Because it gives you the ability to do that, right?
Yeah.
I'll give you another example. There was a storyline going on where, oh man, I don't want to get too deep into it. Basically, you got a parasite in your brain. And if you don't get it out, bad things going to happen. If you meet these mind flayers around, they're kind of like demonic alien type cats. If you meet them around, sometimes they can try to like control you with their mind. So I got in this bad scenario where this mean alien was stuck under some rocks and he convinced some other people to try to help him out by pretending he was their dead daughter. And I went over and helped them out. And then he was like, mind control. And he mind controlled me and I got killed. Right. So I reloaded and then I just stood 8 feet away and he's trapped on the rock. I'm like, arrow. And he just died. It's like, well, yeah, of course you can do that. Sure. Why not? It's Dungeons and Dragons. You can do whatever dumb crap you want. But it feels sometimes less like a video game and more like just a, I don't know. It's not realistic, obviously, but it's flexible.
Let me rephrase my question, because I think hearing all this, I have a different perspective now. What does it benefit the player, right? Like the average person releasing the game incomplete when it's a game that is like clearly about story like this, right? Like, is there a reason that it is good for the player? I get why it's good for a studio, right? You get some money, you get a lot of data on like how players play. I imagine you can use that data to figure out like what you want to invest in the future. But for the player, is there like an obvious benefit to the game being available right now?
I honestly think there are people that want to play these games as early as humanly possible. I am not necessarily one of those people. I prefer to play something that's more finished. But I do think people get super, super jazzed at something and want to feel like they're part of the evolution of the game. I think this game is in a better, certainly not complete because there's still a lot of issues with it, but it's in a better state than Rogue Legacy, which is another early access game we talked about earlier this year, to the point where the core of it feels pretty baked, right? Like it works effectively how it should work. The issues that you run into are like cutscene issues or, random crashes, stuff like that. But the core feels very baked. And that core, I think, is something that players want to mess around with. So I kind of get that.
Wait, can I address Chris Plant's question before we move into the issues? Because there are many of those. I also think that for something like this, which is Dungeons & Dragons, there are people for whom having a, like, for starters, Dungeons & Dragons is a game that evolves with a lot of feedback from the community. I mean, it's almost developed hand in hand with the community giving feedback on the game. And that's why they've had so many additions, right? You could, I think there are a lot of people for whom having a really solid, functional Dungeons and Dragons sort of like interactive simulator, for lack of a better term, could be down the road really valuable. Like, could be really important to have something that could like really do a good job of emulating Dungeons and Dragons in this format. And I think there's people who want to like, they enjoy being involved with that. Like they enjoy being involved with it and getting to weigh in on it.
I wanted to check out this game knowing full well that it was, you know, who wants to play the first act of a big RPG? Like that in and of itself, like if you put the bugs aside, like who wants to play this massive grand fantasy storyline knowing that you're going to reach the conclusion of the first part of it and then not be able to play the rest of the story. So I think you have to have there's a certain type of person that knows what they're getting into when they play this. For me, the prospect of playing a genuine fifth edition video game, a genuine Dungeons and Dragons like experience with, which I have not played with the multiplayer, but I think that also has the potential to be something like super, super cool. Being able to recreate the table sort of goofing around experience. The biggest thing I feel like that is going to be the main thing, the main rough edge that they have to work out is quest progression and world like continuity, which is the biggest bug hurdle that I think people are facing. I have definitely reached like a point where I was doing a quest and then like I just wasn't able to keep going on with it, or the person that I was supposed to talk to wouldn't talk to me anymore. And when you have a game where like you are given as much freedom as this game gives you, in almost that sort of like Arkane Studios, like that Dishonored like way where it's like, oh, I could go through this whole dungeon or I could just use this jump spell to leap on top of the roof and skip all that shit. How do you keep this? How do you keep this one storyline that you were on going when you can do shit like that, which is like the Skyrim problem, where Skyrim's been out for 1,000 years and it still fucks that up.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine it like visually as a juggler just adding more balls in the air, right? Like for every time you give it a new thing to remember that you did, that the odds increase that they're all going to come crashing down. Especially this early.
Yeah, it is in just to give, in case people are sort of like, we should try to be clear about the scope of this for people who are thinking, like, kind of debating. Unfortunately, I think the term early access has been done a disservice with people who want to release a game with bugs in it and not have to be accountable for those bugs. I think there's a lot of early access games that are like that. I think this and Rogue Legacy are in a category of early access where it's just like, no, listen, it is bare. I will let you walk in here, but like, the house is being constructed around you. You can go and look around, but like it's not a fully functional like video game. You can play and get an idea of kind of what they're going for, but like I had the main storyline quest of like getting this thing out of your head. The guy I was supposed to talk to about it is like, I'll meet you out in the caves. I was like, okay. So this is in some like druid enclave. He's like, I'll meet you in the caves. And then I left and I come back. And he's still there. He said, I'll talk to you about this in the caves. It's like, well, can you go to the caves? Because I would love, very much like to talk about this parasite in my head. I'll meet you in the caves. And he never did.
I'm dying, yeah. Sir.
No, listen, this is a cave thing. Trust me. Take it from me, Zevlor. This is a cave-ish.
Look at this. This is a tentacle. This is a tentacle in my mouth that is coming out.
I got all my tentacle shit in the caves. So we got to hit the caves real
so
quick.
I
just got a few more things to wrap up here, and then I'm going to be caving it, my man.
Can I also want to critique one other aspect, and this is an aspect that will probably make it into the final game, and I don't know how to fix this problem. I walk into fire, a lot.
Yeah.
Too much.
A lot.
For someone that knows
lot.
I should be afraid of fire, I walk into fire a lot. And I don't know how to fix that problem, because all it takes is, like, clicking on the wrong pixel that looks like maybe it's not on fire, but it actually is on fire, and then you lose like all your hit points, and I don't know how to address that problem.
I had a party wipe today, this morning, caused by ensnaring roots. Like, I wanted them to go from A to B, and they were like walking through the roots, and they get stuck, and they're like, ah, fuck, roots! I'm like, okay, well, go walk away, and then they walked, my wizard guy walked away. He's like, ah, fuck, those fucking roots, man, watch out. And then the rogue walks right into the roots, and the rogue's like, ah, roots! They got me, this is really hurting. And then the wizard is like, oh, roots, right? Hold on. I know just the thing. Let me help you with that. Walks back into the roots to hang out with Thief Guy. Everybody is in the roots, will not get out of the roots. There's stuff like this, very mundane like that. Even getting around the world, sometimes there's like a gap where you have to jump over it. And it's like rolling on your jumps, right? Like you have a jump range and you can jump. And when one character jumps, your main character jumps, not everybody like jumps over to follow them. So I'm like manually going through. It's like, okay, now you jump over. Okay, good. Next person. All right, now you walk over, jump. Okay, first guy, you need to move because you're not giving them room to jump. Come on, kids. Play together nicely.
I think that it's important to kind of compare this to Divinity Original Sin 2, which I cannot recommend highly enough, and I feel like you see the DNA of what they are going for in Baldur's Gate 3 so clearly in that, where the big thing in Divinity Original Sin 2 was the idea of surface interaction. Mm-hmm. So much so that like the entire sort of game classes were built around that. So there was like the Aerotherge and the Hydromancer and the Geomancer. And like, so each of those had the ability to transform the environment into different things, almost in like a puzzle game style. So Geomancers worked with poison. They could spread this poison gas throughout the battlefield. And then a Pyromancer could set it on fire with a fireball. Or a Hydromancer could take a pool of water and the Aeromancer could strike it with lightning and electrocute it. That is happening here in Baldur's Gate 3. You can cast the grease spell on the ground and create like a slippery trap for enemies, or set it on fire with a, you know, a fire arrow, or it, like there's so many different interactions like that. But it's not necessarily D&D is not necessarily exactly built for that exact system in mind. And so, you know, it was almost always good in Divinity Original Sin 2 to have somebody with the rain spell who could just like, if you ran into a dungeon and there was this huge crazy fire trap in it, you could rain on it. Or if there was some bad surface, you could rain on it and nullify it. Without that option, like always at hand, it's kind of a pain in the ass when you do like go into a room and it's like, there's a big treasure chest in the middle, but the room's covered in grease. Well, fuck that, because I don't want to spend the next 5 minutes just yakety saxing my way to this tomb. I don't know how they fix that, but I also, after playing Divinity Original Sin 2 and seeing what they have done in this early access build and adapting 5th edition rules to a video game in a way that I've never really seen before, like, I have more faith in Larian Studios to pull this off than like really any other developer on
I agree with that.
I feel like this is a fine, it is a fine proof of, it's more than a proof of concept. It is a fine like structure, a fine lattice work for what I think can be a really, really, really substantial, cool RPG.
Y'all want to talk about Xbox?
Yeah, let's absolutely do that. But go ahead, Chris, start whenever you're ready. No, wait, Chris. We're going to take a commercial break.
Dang,
sorry
it.
To cut you off. Extremely rude. Extremely rude. Wow. Who is this guy? I pre-ordered a PlayStation 5. I didn't pre-order an Xbox when I had the chance. Now there are no more. I felt very good about this decision and the way things shook out. And now here comes Chris Plant to make me doubt myself.
I like it. I like the Xbox Series X.
How did you get one? Because they're not out till November. Did your uncle steal one?
My uncle, Todd Microsoft. Have you, you've met him, right? I thought he like came to your wedding.
Plant's uncle works at Microsoft. He holds it over her head all the time. He knew about Halo 7 before anybody else.
Part of the Bethesda acquisition actually was that Todd Howard had to change his name to Todd Microsoft, which seems like weirdly possessive.
So the Xbox Series X, it is effectively right now the world's best Xbox 360. That is my selling point, which means that its appeal is for a very specific type of person. But the thing that I am loving about it is, it turns out being able to, just instantly have an entire catalog of games that I had already purchased for the original Xbox or 360. And then you turn on the Xbox Series X, and it's like, hey, remember all those old games that you like just forgot about for like the last 8 years while you were busy playing games everywhere else? They still exist, and they're pretty good. And they actually run really well now, and they look gorgeous on your 4K TV. Would you like to play them? And you're like, yeah, I like to play them. And they're like, cool. It's already on, because loading times don't exist for these games. And it's like, what? Oh, cool. And then it's like, actually, 15 minutes of Crackdown. I'm kind of bored. I want to play Hydro Thunder now. And they're like, oh, you do? Good, because it's already loaded. Just hit this button. You're like, what? I'm already in Hydro Thunder and I'm already beating everybody's top scores? And I'm like, yeah, you are. I'm like, oh, man, I did one race, but you know what? Now I'm missing Crackdown. Probably going to be a while before that game starts, right? And they're like, no, it's just waiting for you. Right over here, just click this button. I'm like, what? Now I'm back in the air and I'm stomping criminals as a suddenly very problematic cop character. Probably was always problematic, but now I am keenly aware of it.
As Plant continues to talk, I'm just imagining him wearing cargo shorts that have increasing numbers of pockets. Just the more he talks, the more pockets his imaginary cargo shorts
have. It's good. And that's the pleasure of it. I wrote about this a little bit at Polygon, but it's really hitting me with this generation of video game consoles that my hype is not for the world's coolest graphics, because you're not going to get them. Like, if you want that, I guess go buy a PC and spend, you know, about $2,000. But finally getting the ease of use that has been available on PC for the last, 5 years, and getting that on console, getting really, really fast hard drives, getting the frame rates that just work, getting kind of the promise of the previous generation. It feels good, man. I like it.
Yeah, so that, I think that all makes sense, and I totally like get that selling point, but it is kind of weird that like all you're really saying is like, hey, this new console runs these old games really super duper well. Is that enough for people? Like, of course it runs.
That sounds like novelty to me a little bit. Like, the scenario sounds cool, but it's like, how quickly does,
like,
it,
and of course it runs well. Like, these are games that are 8 years old. Like, they damn well better run well, right?
No, actually, that's not an of course.
That's
because
not a guarantee.
Most consoles don't run them at all, right?
Sure. That's
like
true.
That's the big difference. And the consoles that did, like, had to get custom patches to make old games run better. So, like, this isn't an assumed. It's an assumed if you have a PC. It is not an assumed here. And even with PC, how often do you go and try to play old games and it has to install an old version of DirectX or some other?
Just
doesn't
fucking
work
right?
Like,
at all.
Yeah. Like, I think there's a lot of things that a lot of PC gamers will say, well, we've already have that. And it's like, ish, yeah. If you want to troubleshoot it for a while, sure. You have a lot of things. And I love my PC, but there is a real pleasure of playing some of my favorite games of all time and playing them instantly, and they look just fantastic. The other thing that I'll say about the novelty of it and do you need it now? No, of course you don't need it now. You don't need any video game console at launch except for maybe the Switch. Like, that's the reality of it. What I think is good about this is you actually do have some incentive to own an Xbox Series X or Series S at launch. Like, there actually is stuff for you to enjoy. I'm sure that the counterpoint here is that the PS5 plays Spider-Man or whatever, which I guess also plays on PS4.
And,
I guess
Demon's Souls
is the one exclusive, which is great. I mean, I also have a PS3. But I don't think there's, with either console, a necessity to buy one of these right now. That said, if you are, and I think there's like a number of people who listen to the show who fall into this category. If you went with PS4 for the last generation and don't have an Xbox, I would consider a Series X or Series S now, especially because Game Pass means you can play lots of games. I mean, we've talked about it a trillion times on the show, and I obviously am a huge like stand for it. But I think that is a pretty sweet deal right now.
Yeah, I mean, there is a part of me that's like, because I was able to pre-order a Series X as well, and I've sort of been like vacillating on whether I need it or not. Well, need it, but want it or not. And one of the like things that is making me hesitate is because I played predominantly on PS4 and focused on like buying digital games. Like, if it was a cross-platform game, I opted for PS4 because it ran better there. So now, while you're right, I will have a lot of 360 games that are digital that I own. I will not have a lot of digital Xbox One games because, generally speaking, I went with the PS4 on that. And whether that is a detractor or not, I mean, you're right. I could sign up for Game Pass and pay a subscription fee, and I totally agree with you. It's a tremendously good deal. But I think there are also maybe people that like feel a little pot committed because of the last generation and don't necessarily want to lose those games. And a lot of those last generation games will run on PS4. You won't be able to play PS3 games. We'll run on PS5. You won't be able to play PS3 games predominantly, but a lot of those games, the PS4 games, will run on PS5. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it, to be honest.
A couple questions. Chris, yes. One, do you have, and can you talk about, like, do you have actual launch games, or did they just send you the hardware to mess around?
Well, what on earth could that mean? What on earth could that mean?
I've played two. I played Dirt 5. Which is actually interesting because I'm not a huge Dirt fan. But it's made by the studio that did Onrush, which was also like largely the leftover people from the team that did MotorStorm. And it's like pretty arcadey races, and it's all about like surfaces. So you like are on mud or just this like weird like watery surface.
Is there like, another surface that you might be on?
Ice.
Oh, ice. Anything else?
Rocks.
Okay.
Yeah, I can go all day.
What about small, super ground up rocks?
Yeah, gravel. I think that's what it's called.
Oh, okay.
Damn it.
Pavement.
No, that's wrong.
Sand.
Small rocks held together by cement. Sand. No.
What about what about like brown sand?
Dirt.
That kind of.
Oh, dirt. Five. Oh,
got it. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, it looks very, very good. Their games have always looked fantastic. It is the game that has a 120 frames per second mode, which is very cool. It works on one TV, the LG, well, I guess the new LG CX, also the old LG C9. I have one of the C9s and I tested it. Very neat. Do I think anybody should rush out to buy a next-gen console so that they can play games at 120 frames per second? No.
Can you see that?
Definitely not.
Can you see it?
What?
Is it visible? Can you like
It is noticeable. But at a certain point, it is diminishing returns after you get past 60 frames per second. For like the average person, I would say. Yeah. I think if you're a competitive esports, obviously that's very different. So that's that. The thing that is way more interesting is I started playing the new Yakuza, which is the turn-based Yakuza.
Yeah.
It rules. It is. I cannot wait for all of you to play this game so we can talk about it on the show. It rules so much. It is so funny. It is so charming. And I was really skeptical. I'm not a big turn-based combat fan. I liked the more like just smash buttons, break people's skulls combat of the previous Yakuza games. Turns out I was wrong. Turns out the game is much better as a turn-based combat game, because you travel with your entire party, which is a ton of different characters. And now instead of it just being you going around town, getting weird jobs and having odd fighting things, it is an entire squad of people. So you become a gig economy worker. You spend a lot of time picking up recycling cans. You travel across Yokohama, taking photos of Kappa statues. Mm-hmm. One of my this isn't great, but the woman in my group, she is well put together, and she has an attack with a hair iron that scolds people. You have a person you have a person who has a frying pan as a weapon. It's all very, 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 very silly and very wonderful.
I'm looking forward to that. But why don't we?
I had one last follow up about, sorry. And this was like the thing I actually give a shit about, is the like system architecture, like the actual interface of it, because that was like anytime I would turn on the Xbox One, which is very rare, to like play a game, and I was met with the like
squares,
the squares, yes, and the extremely slow loading main menu of the Xbox One. It was a big hurdle.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can talk about that for this.
I don't want to say a ton, just because I know that they're like still updating it and there's still like a little bit of time between now and then. The things that I can say, it runs fine, smoothly. I have had zero trouble finding my games. I did not have the same reaction turning it on that I did when I turned on the Xbox One, which was, why did you do this to me? I think it's important to remember the Xbox One user interface was designed with Kinect at its center. That's why it was so opaque, because they just wanted you to just say what you needed. And then they had to retroactively remove all of that piece by piece. And it made for just, I think, a terrible experience for most of the Xbox One's life cycle. Honestly, it's funny that I say that. I wonder how much of my love of this console is like, oh yeah, finally. Like a true sequel to the Xbox 360. Like, it's just a great video game console.
Just put fucking Blades on it, man. Give me a button I can press to just turn on Blades.
Blades it up.
It looks not so bad. I was a little worried about this little PC looking funky in the living room, it's not as hideous or obtrusive.
It doesn't look hideous. It looks like something you can ignore, which you can't really say about the PS5. The PS5 makes a statement, and that statement is inverted ice cream sandwich on your TV.
No, it looks like a yoga block, like a black yoga block.
Yeah, which you can ignore. Like, it just fades into the background, which is honestly my preference of how gaming consoles should be. I don't want Sony to or Microsoft to decide how my living room looks. Let me do that. It's you know, Magic Eye posters all over the walls. It's great.
Yeah. Just one more thought to go back to Justin's point, which is more about, like, how do the games play versus, like, what the games are, I think, when you asked about next-gen games. So Microsoft has, I don't know, the very jargony velocity architecture is their, like, response for, like, how their NVMe SSD works really well, which is your storage. And I will say the load times on the next-gen games are small. On Yakuza, they're, like, is a load time, but it's not bad. On Dirt 5, I would be in, like, the race select mode, hit a button, and I'm just, like, in the race, which is great.
Wow.
Not to be, like, a total skeptic about it, but I do think a lot of this has to do with the fact that we are obviously even before the generation has even started, and it sort of seems like these are features that will, over time, as with any generation, over time, be less and less precise, right? Like, 3 years down the road, a Halo game or whatever, Fable, is not necessarily going to load in an instant because it's pushing more of the hardware.
I would wager first party games are for sure going to leverage that. For me, it's like games that are going to be made sort of system agnostic. It is harder for them to, like, build all of their shit around a certain, like, hard drive infrastructure on a console. I don't know. I feel like Fable is going to absolutely have the fast load times because they are making it for the fast load times for the Xbox.
And also, like, if you, again, think about previous console generations, that was not the case with the Xbox One. I mean, I remember Zoo Tycoon or whatever it was called having some serious load times.
Yeah, sure. Like, even at launch.
I do think you're right. It's the same thing, like, you know, a lot of people have asked me about, you know, is it loud? It's like, no, of course it's not loud. Like, it's new. My PS4 Pro was a whisper the day that I turned it on for the first time. And now it screams at me.
But with all your smoking that you do, it's built what up, all your vaping.
I also just blew it directly into the PS4 Pro.
I had one last question regarding file sizes. How big is Dirt 5? How big is Yakuza?
I honestly do not know. I know they're large. I mean,
it's all in memory card blocks. Right. So it's like 64,000
blocks. The reason I ask is, as I understand it, the Xbox Series X out of the box has 850 some odd gigs free once you account for the UI and the interface and everything like that.
So, like, enough space for Call of Duty Warzone and maybe, like, one other game.
Right, yeah. Castle Crashers and Call of Duty Warzone.
I think that obviously is going to fill up pretty quick. The one thing that I thought was interesting, and Digital Foundry made a video about this, is for backwards compatibility, it doesn't seem like it's using the high-end velocity architecture or whatever for load times. You can get pretty good improvements just off of, I guess it's because of the CPU. Again, I'm going off of things that are outside my brain. But you can get an external SATA SSD and just plug it into the back of your Xbox and put all of your backwards compatible stuff on that, and you still see significant improvements over the Xbox One load times. Mm-hmm. Like significant. So I think, like, that's what I'm planning to do, you know, rather than even getting the fancy custom, you know, direct into the motherboard thing. Just getting one of those that's, like, I don't know, 2 terabytes, and putting most of my stuff on that, and just putting any of the new next-gen games onto the custom hard drive.
Yeah. Well, has anyone been convinced? I'm just curious to wrap this up.
Oh, okay. Have I been convinced? I think that I probably am still okay waiting, but I think that, well, I mean, it's kind of out of my hands, right? Like, I'm not going to go through the hoops that I would need to pre-order one before launch, I think. But when the time comes, I think I'll be a little bit more. Let me tell you this. The plant is describing that I've gone back and forth on which console is my main console in the past few generations. And I think that this, like, I was primarily Xbox 360, now I'm primarily PS4. Plant is listing the kind of things that would make me inclined to make this the predominant console, but not necessarily one that I'm like, sure, rushing to.
Yeah, and to be clear, I really don't want to convince anybody. I think for most people, you should probably wait. Like, I think we'll know a lot more about both of these consoles in early to mid 2021, and if you have a current generation console, it will more than enough get you there. Unless you're the type of person who just really likes to play games at their like maximum graphic potential, like I don't think, sure, anybody needs to rush just yet.
Do we want to do mail, or we want to talk about what else we've been playing?
Do we have mail?
We have some mail. I'll do a couple questions really quick. This question is from Dylan. Can I play Baldur's Gate 3 if I've never played any Baldur's Gate games before?
Yes.
Yes, I never have.
So
I mean, there's a certain amount of like tone that you learn about playing the past Baldur's Gate games, but I think I've only played Baldur's Gate 1 and like the first few hours of 2, and I don't feel like I am missing anything.
Here's something for you. I don't even know what Baldur's Gate is. I've heard a few people in the world like, God, I miss Baldur's Gate. The fish were so good. I'm like, I don't know what that is. What is it? Cool, is it a gate? Is it a place?
I think the analog is the Elder Scrolls series, which is to say most people have not played all the Elder Scrolls games. There are things that carry over, like, you know, there are like mythical godlike creatures that might show up and you'll be like, oh, I remember him from the last game, whatever. But generally speaking, no, it doesn't fucking matter.
I'd say the bigger institutional knowledge is 5th edition. Yeah. Like if you've played, I felt genuinely the start, like I did not really need to do most of the tutorial in Baldur's Gate 3. If you know how to play 5th edition.
That's interesting, Griffin. I didn't really think of it from that perspective. There's going to be a lot, that UI is going to look pretty wild to you if you're like, well, why would I do a sneak attack? How can I do a sneak attack if I'm not sneaking up on them?
Yeah, I was actually a little overwhelmed because of that, because I haven't played a ton of 5th edition. So it was that is definitely something that, I don't know, will take some learning if you haven't played that.
The other thing, can I say one? I should have said it back in our Baldur's Gate discussion, but the other big thing that will throw you will see percentages on ranged attacks that, and also on melee attacks, that you would associate in almost every other game for the percentage. How can I explain this, Griffin? The likelihood that your weapon will connect with the target that you are trying to hit. And in D&D, those percentages more reflect how good the target is at
dodging?
Really? Right? I mean, like, yes. It's not.
So when I see 95%, so like when I'm shooting an arrow at someone, it's not 95% chance to hit?
It is 95% chance to hit.
Yeah.
But it's chance to hit is, okay, chance to hit. If you take that as a static thing, right? In almost like in if you're playing XCOM, chance to hit is my bullet's got to go over this, you know, through this grate, and he's 100 meters away from me, and it's going to be harder for me to hit them. In Dungeons and Dragons, chance to hit also factors in like how good they are at dodging and their armor class, which is like the amount through which they can like. The chance that they have to not get,
but
hit
it can also be increased with things like advantage, which is an important system. But I will say to the game's credit, they are really good at explaining those numbers. There's a little pop up box that, like, if you're aiming at somebody and you only have a 30% chance to hit, it'll explain like, well, you're too close, they have higher ground, and you are currently threatened by another attack. So if you can remedy those and you can get high, and now you have advantage, that number is going to jump up to like 96.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's smart.
Here's another question for y'all. What else are y'all playing right now?
I've been playing a game called Cubism, which is a VR game. It's on Oculus Quest, and I believe it's on main Oculus as well. But it's really excellent on Quest. It's very hard to describe without it sounding very boring, but effectively it is, you know, like Tangrams. The idea is you've got this cube and you're trying to fill it with different pieces, like Tetris blocks, basically. And that's the entire game. But the presentation of the game is so simple and clean, and there's some classical music playing in the background, and you really just sit at a, you know, in a normal chair. You don't need to do like crazy VR somersaults, and just slowly, and methodically like spin the puzzle around and solve these puzzles. And I just found it really soothing. I think a lot of VR is designed to be transport you to another world or be a total like, you know, mindfuck. But in this case, I think Cubism does an excellent, excellent job at just being like, hey, here's this like kind of meditative, thoughtful thing to take you away from maybe like a stressful day or something like that. So highly recommend that.
I've been spending my free time playing Animal Crossing.
What?
Yeah, it's been nice. I don't know that the stuff they've added has been so transformative that like there is that much of a reason to get back in if you've fallen off. But for me, it is seeing what the community has been mm-hmm. making. Like there are these town genres that have like organically been created, things like, oh well, this is a cottagecore island, and this is, and you now have like, it is much easier to go out there and find inspiration for how to design your shit, which makes it sort of apparent the pitfalls that I fell into when laying out my town. Like I made it so orderly that it looks weird to me how orderly it is, so I've just been going through and like pretty methodically destroying the town, like pretty methodically knocking down mountains and filling in rivers so that I can have a clean slate to start over. And that's been really satisfying for me. It's just slow fucking going, but it's, you know, I have 300 flowers growing in this one field that I want to just tear out. Yeah. So that takes like forever. But if you can get in sort of a zen-like flow about it, it's been pretty enjoyable.
I've been playing Hades, which I know we've talked about a couple times, but wow, that game.
Good fucking game, man.
Hey, bud, I'm still playing the best game of the year, and it is just keeps getting better. I've now completed it 4 times, I think, with different weapons. It is...
It's a good game.
Superb. I just want to go play it again. It's fantastic.
What's your favorite weapon at this point?
Oh, man, I really go back and forth. I just finished upgrading the... Chaos shield, where like after you do your bull rush, you throw 5 shields, and it feels completely broken. It's fantastic. Also, the heart seeking bow, where you, if you hit someone with your regular attack, when you fire your multi shot special, all of the multi shot will home in on that enemy. And it is
delicious. Get them magnet fists. The magnet fists is still the absolute best time.
And getting the splash boons on that, so you like knock them away and yo-yo them. That is just beat the game with that run last night.
It's so fun. Juice, you been playing anything?
Mainly Hades. I talked about Solitaire Conspiracy. I finished that. Very good, very enjoyable. I can't believe Mike Bithell made a fucking Sega CD game about Solitaire in the year of our Lord 2020, Anno Domini, but it is very, very good. I downloaded it and played 15 minutes of Genshin Impact.
Oh, boy, bud.
And I may go back just so I could... I may play it just so I can force you guys to listen to me talk about it. Even if I don't enjoy it,
I would go on that journey with you, I feel like.
Yeah.
Same.
Let's get in there.
I know you finished Paradise Killer, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Paradise Killer. Thank you,
Griffin. We talked about it last week a little bit.
We talked about it last week, Chris, when you weren't here. Game... It fucking rips, man.
Frushtick, have you played it?
I have not played it, no.
Oh, Frushtick, it's so good. Oh, God. If you... Griffin mentioned Oberdin, and I think it's very close. I mean, it's like... It's very different in terms of, like, the aesthetics and the tone, but, like, it... I have never played something that, like... Imagine if David Lynch had payoffs for things, and it's like, wow, this is really weird. I hope something happens with it. And it's like, oh my God, something is happening with it. That's so wild. I love David
Lynch.
He
hates payoffs.
That is a satisfaction that you want from his stuff.
It is the Daytona USA team made Oberdin. It is the weirdest Sega energy.
And they got weirdly, weirdly, very, very horny in the middle of making it. And
so horny. Extremely horny. And also, I don't know what vaporwave is, but it's extremely vaporwave. And enough said, I think, about that. Period.
It is definitely gonna be up there for me. I think it is a contender by its tone alone, and you should play it.
Next week, we're going down to talk about some spooky games, new spooky games to give you the shivers and scares in this most frightening season.
Because we didn't want to do a whole episode about Genshin Impact.
Or Crash.
Crash Bandicoot. The bad Bandicoot.
Blood. He's back. You guys bought this last game so hard that they accidentally made Crash Bandicoot. Everybody bought it as a goof, and then they're like, you like this? Fine, here, go. We are a Spotify original podcast. You can follow and listen for free on Spotify, and it would mean so much to us as we round. We're headed into the home stretch of this year. The future of whether or not there will be more besties depends on you, our beloved listeners, sharing the show. Besties.fan is the link to share. You can also send us some mail@besties.fan if you have a. You know what? It would actually be really helpful if you have a genuinely spooky game. Not like, oh, it's so scary how good Fortnite is. You know, like a real scary game that came out this year. Let us know. Give us a shout. mail@besties.fan. That's going to do it for us for this week. So until next time, thank you for listening, besties. And join us again next week for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Fox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!